Okay. Rabbi Rosner's second essay, he calls Genuine Hospitality. And he goes back to Hashem appeared to Avram in the plains of Mamre. He's sitting at the entrance of his tent. The day was very hot. He lifted his eyes, and we said in the trance he perceived three men were standing. He saw, he immediately ran, though he was in pain, towards them, and he bowed down to the ground. Right, the opening pasuk tells us.
David Slomnicki, good morning.
Right, the opening pasuk tells us that Avram Avinu was looking for people to invite in, people who he could extend hospitality to. He said, if we look in the pasuk, it gives us the word vayad appears twice. He says the first time means he saw, and the second time the verb is used, he understood. He immediately understood that these individuals in the desert needed hospitality. He was recuperating from his bris. Nonetheless, he ran and invited him. And this is a classic source of the mitzvah of Achnasas Orchim, inviting guests. And we find, as we go on, when the angels go to Sodom, Lot too invites them in, even though it was totally against the bylaws in Sodom, Lot goes out of his way to invite them in. Chazal teach us about Avraham being the paradigm, the example of Chnosas Arachim, but it says, according to Rabbi Rosner, that they sort of glance over Lot's hospitality. He quotes Rav Levi Yitzchak Mibar Dichov in the Kevua Zorot B'Noam, Hashem. He says they both Avram and Lot, engaged in the midst of Achnasas Orchim, but there was a qualitative difference. When Lot's actions are described, it says, two malachim came towards stone. They were explicitly identified as angels. Whereas with regards to Avram, it says anashim. They were men. Rebbe explained that Avraham thought they were men, probably simple nomads in the desert. And he acted to take care of them. Lot, it would appear, understood these were angels, exceedingly important, dignified beings. And that's what spurred him to host them. In Lot's eyes, important people, right, deserve this treatment. Avram, by contrast, being the Isha Chesed, the man who lived kindness, ran towards every guest. It didn't matter what their station in life was. The essence of the mitzvah is not for our pride or covet, but it's to help the people whom we're hosting. It's a wonderful thing to serve as a host for visiting, you know, politicians who have importance, visiting Rabbanim. But the true test is, do you invite the simple people, the people who, as we say, are the hamoinam, you know, the general population? And the question becomes, when we're going to do chesed, what is the motivation? Is it because the needy have this requirement? Or is it something done for my ego? Is it self-aggrandishment? There's a story about Rav Levi Yitzchak Mibarditchov. It says he once came to a place called Lvov, and he went to stay in the house of one of the wealthy individuals. He requested a room where he could spend the night. There was no photography, and so no one knew he was there. The wealthy individual said, "I'm sorry, I don't put up travelers." The Levi pushed and he said, "Just give me a small little room. I won't bother you." He said, "I wish I had room. Down the road is a teacher who always finds room for people." A lady Yitzchak went and was welcome. A little while later, the word got out somehow in the town that a lady Yitzchak was down, and everyone ran to the teacher's house to get a glimpse of him. The rich man, totally embarrassed, said, "I didn't recognize you. If I had known, there's no way I would have done what I did." And Levi Yitzchak said, "How can I grant you mesila? Is there a special mitzvah of hachnasot from Levi Yitzchak and then a separate mitzvah of hachnasas orchim? The mitzvah is to honor any human being who's needy. Avram Avinu taught us that. We're not looking just to have the great and the mighty stay in our midst. But we've got to be willing to extend ourselves for anyone, right? Other than those who may be dangerous, right, or problematic." And he says that's the message that Avraham Avinu tried to teach every single Yid. The angel come, Avraham gives them a meal, and Avram says, "Vayan Avram, Vayemer Hinei Noho Alti Ledaber El Adoni Vani Ofar V'Yisher." It says, "I have begun to speak to my master, and I am dust and ashes." This is when Avram is about to intercede on behalf of Stone. Rav Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzedek Livracha, says that a humble person embodies two ingredients. It's not only that I am dust and ashes, it's also, he says, that somehow it's I have just begun to speak. He says, this phrase is foundational to the Jewish worldview. Halacha, built on laws of modesty, talks about he calls it the dichotomy of importance and worthlessness. On the one hand, the modesty derived from I am aware that I have just begun to speak to the Lord. He says in a certain consciousness that a human being has because they stand in the presence of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. We can never forget HaKadosh Baruch Hu's constant presence. And if we are in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, that gives us self-worth, importance, and probably godly given abilities. So we develop with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's blessing, self-worth, self-confidence. But if that's the case, how can we develop humility? And he says there's a mistake. He says being humble doesn't mean I'm a schmata. I can't do anything. He says that's stupidity, not humility. Moshe Rabbeinu, the most humble of every individual, right? Didn't believe that he had no ability to do anything. If he had believed that, how would he have taken on mighty kings? How would he have attempted to undo the sin of the ego? But what he realized was that whatever he had was given to him by the Almighty. Every power that Avraham Avinu and Moshe Rabbeinu instinctively realized that they had, they knew this was all given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Any koicha, any power, any ability given, we must acknowledge is not something that we truly developed. It all comes from the Rabbeinu Shalom. Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin wrote that the ultimate tragedy is not when human beings don't false, but rather when human beings don't recognize the abilities, the strengths, the potential Baruch Hu has given them. Hazal tells us that Aaron HaKohen got people to do tshuva by being an Ohev Shalom and Rodev Shalom. He loved the very of peace, and he made major efforts. He ran after, he pursued Shalom. He would try to befriend every person, because when people realized that Aaron HaKohen, right, the second greatest human being in existence at his time, was making an effort to go over to talk to them, to smile with them, to ask them how's it's going, to wish them a mazel tov on whatever happened, they realized, hey, there must be something within that has value. That inspired them to do things. And probably when Aaron would say to them, be someone who works for Shalom, they probably felt they had that ability. He says, we're told that if we can, and to the extent we can, we should remember, Shifti Hashem l'neged tomi. And which Ray Ravner translates is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is my friend and is always with me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will continue to remind every person of their self-worth, of their capabilities. And Rabbi Rosner says, we know, he says, from life and from what goes on in the world, that maybe one of the greatest challenges human beings have is that when they begin to realize what they can do and what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has allowed them to do and accomplish, they may somehow turn to a certain level of arrogance. And he says, that's when we've got to remember Avraham Avinu and Moshe Rabbeinu, who accomplished more than any of us ever can do, and who always remained humble.
There's a certain, are you optimistic at all that we can end the shutdown soon?
We're told that Avraham had interactions with Avimelech, the king of the Plishtim, and there's an interesting comment. When, as was the custom of the kings that Avraham came, they tried to capture Sarah, even though she was probably 100 years old at that stage of the game, she still in beauty dwarfed anyone else in existence. And the king said to Avraham Avinu, you know, how could you have done that? How could you have pretended that she was not your wife? You allowed me to go ahead and commit a grave sin. What did you do? And Avraham said, for I said, certainly there is no fear of a Kaddish Baruch here. This is lawless, and there's no doubt they will kill me to steal my wife. This is a similar example to what happened with Paroi. And again, in both cases, Sarah is captured, right? And Avimelech, the king of Gror, I said Plishtim rather, I'm sorry, takes Sarah into his palace, and immediately everybody is stricken with illness. And they're told it's because he captured Avraham Avinu's wife. So he says, Avraham Avinu, you know, why didn't you tell us she's your wife? We wouldn't have laid a finger on her. Yeah, right. Avchanan Wasserman is puzzled by, there's a word. It says, Avraham said, ruck. But there's no Yerushalayim, no fear of God here. He says, what's this word ruck, but, except? He said, this word, it says, before World War II, Avraham was explaining to Avimelech, there can be a nation that can be polite and civilized. It can be enlightened, and it can look to be well-mannered. But when their behavior is not based on fearing God, the true base, right, the creator of morality, the people can become the most disgusting, lowly, and animalistic nation in minutes. Avraham was concerned that once people knew Sarah was his wife, people, right, who shake society for their own value and their own desire, will set up a law that we can set a law making it a mitzvah in the country. It becomes a law of the land to kill Avraham and steal his wife. About Franz Wasserman, right, seemed to be saying this was what he discerned in the German people before World War II. And we know what history showed us. The Bartonura says, Pirkei Avos begins with the story of the transmission of the Torah. Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. Moshe the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Har Sinai. Right? And he asks, he says, maybe what we should have done in Barachas, the first Gemara, was to delve into the transition. How did we get in specific detail from the Torah Shebichsav, Oral Torah, to the Mishnah? But this, right, this story of transmission occurs later in the Zikin. He says, it would seem that where we read about mitzvahs, right, of about truma, of korbanos, etc., we can understand that those things are mitzvahs that come from heaven. When it comes to halachas that Pirkei Avos has, which is ethical, moral behavior, right? It's critical to realize that these two are part of the Torah, right? And it's put it to the Zikin. The Zikin is the place where we deal with interpersonal actions, whether it be fines for doing the wrong things to society, whether it be items such as negligence in causing damages to another. There's even concepts of stealing behemoths and things like that, right? And in this context, the rules that are delineated and spelled out, we have to realize, are also rules of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, we and the world, to exist properly, have to realize that the notion of society's rules have to be based on a morality that's not man-made. And we can see what's happened in the Western world and in our country, unfortunately, as well, in the last couple of years. Okay. Oh, you murdered one person? Okay, you can have two jets and three giant tickets. Just promise to come back to court, right? Oh, you shoplifted? It's okay. You were probably hungry. Oh, the fact that you hit an old man with a baseball hat at the time? Far fallen. When you get that type of society, you realize it's no longer a society leaned at a morality. It's a society leaned to doing what's good for those who are writing the rules. Or for some other. And what we're being told here is that Avraham Avinu, at the very beginning of the formation of Yiddishkeit, was telling Avinu, and the Torah records it, that this is the critical notion going forward. Klal Yisrael cannot exist without a morality that is totally based on Torah. There is no man-made morality unless dictated by the Torah, unless set up by Beis Din, right? Unless set up by kings like David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech, etc., that can exist and continue to preserve the society. And it may well be that one of the reasons that we're still here as Jews, that we're the aberration of history, is because we got that message. We realize that, right, that there's a higher order. There's a notion of good and bad, right and wrong. That comes Bina Torah. Okay. That's today's share. I thank you for listening.
Thank you. Have a good day.